Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick, your host for this presentation in the Inland Mariners audio series. This series is presented by the Inland Mariners in conjunction with Cypress Pictures and Patrick Lipinski. Today's conversation is with wheelsman Bob Hedin, recorded in 2011, Bob's longtime wheelsman on the motor vessel Indiana Harbor.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, got a cold, but we're doing okay.
You got caller ID?
Yes, I do.
Yes, you know when the office is calling you.
Yep, that too.
So I'm going to start you way back at the beginning of like where you were born, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. I was born in actually in Detroit, Michigan.
And you're the youngest, oldest?
I am the youngest of me and my sister, and my mother had three other kids, but a different husband.
Oh, okay.
I was adopted there when I was, I think, 9 months old to a family in Minnesota here.
And anybody in the family sail in the past?
Yes, my father was an engineer out here.
So is that how you got interested in sailing?
Yep, pretty much. When I was 17 there, he told me if I wasn't going to come home at night and I wasn't going to go to school, that I might as well go to work. So he got me a seaman's card for a birthday present. And that next spring in June, I went to work.
So was this a birthday present you were expecting to get or not?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I always kind of liked the boats. You know, I kind of liked what he did, so... I think it was June of 73 is when my first job was.
Now, he was an engineer, you said?
That's correct. He started off working for, it was Republic Steel, and from there he went to, when Republic went under, he went over with Steinbrenner, and then he retired out of Steinbrenner.
So he had a lengthy career then?
Oh, yeah, he had a full career.
So did you go on the ships when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, I've been crawling around these things since I was about 8 years old. When he first started, if I remember right, he was working on the South American.
Oh, okay. Were you still living in Detroit at the time?
No. I moved to International Falls. He was a boiler inspector for Kemper Insurance before he left there. And so we lived up in International Falls. He was working out of Boise and that up there.
Before he sailed.
Right. So then when I was 8 years old, I don't really know what the logistics of the whole thing were, but he started sailing. He had a marine engineer's license from when he was in the service. And so he went back to work on the lakes.
Where did you live at the time when he started sailing?
In Cloquet.
Okay. So what do you remember about him being out as a sailor?
Once a week, there's a drive to Silver Bay. And then every once in a while, if things went right, you know, he'd be on, I think he's on McCurdy there for the Merle M. McCurdy for many years. So that was hauling grain out of Superior.
So he had longer visits then.
Yep, longer visits then.
Are you the first person other than your father then to sail?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay. When did you start at age 17 then?
Right.
Or 18?
17.
Okay. So you shipped out when, in the fall?
It was mid-June of 1973.
Do you remember your catching your first ship?
Yep. It was a Frank R. Denton, and I caught it in Taconite Harbor.
What was going through your mind when you got there?
What the hell? I don't know. Wasn't much going through my head. You know, I was just a young kid and out for the adventure.
Sure. And you went out as a deckhand?
Yep. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But it was a lot different lifestyle back then.
How do you mean?
Well, I caught the boat at 5 in the morning, and they showed me where my room was, and I shared the room with two other guys. You know, of course, they had... like little wire bunks that were suspended from the bulkheads and a little mattress thrown on top of that. 7 o'clock in the morning. They woke me up to go to work. Said you start at 8 o'clock, and they put a bottle of wild turkey in my hand.
So how did that first day go then?
I don't know. I can't remember. No, it went pretty. It went okay.
So you finished the wild turkey then?
Well, no. They might have, but I had to go to work.
What was it like your first day? Do you recall? You liked it? You hated it?
I don't know. I guess I'm kind of indifferent to it all. You know, I've been around boats all my life, so it wasn't really much more than going out and making money.
Sure.
I liked the lifestyle back then, you know, because as a young kid back in the early 70s, it was a lot of partying out there, and things were a lot looser. You know, you didn't have all the restrictions of security and everything, and I was off seeing all the big cities. I mean, you come from Cloquet, and next thing you know, you wake up and you're in Cleveland or Buffalo or something like that. You know, that's a big change for a kid 17 years old.
Sure. Now, you didn't want to follow your father into the engine room. You said choose a deck, or was that a choice?
At the time, I would rather be outside. I never liked the heat and the noise of the engine room. I always rather work outside.
So did you stay on the Denton that whole year?
I think I stayed on her till late September, and then I got off of her, and I went back to high school.
Okay, so you hadn't finished high school yet?
No.
Okay.
So I went back to high school, and then in March of 74, I went into service, and I was in the Air Force for a little over 2 years there, and I went back to sailing, and I think it was 1975. Winter 1975, yeah.
Okay.
On the Presque Isle. Now, that one came into Two Harbors. I caught that one in Two Harbors in mid-December when she came around the corner. I'd never seen anything like that before. What in the hell have I got myself into now? Thing was loaded up with ice. I mean, it was just everything.
And that's a little different vessel from a regular steamer, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. She's a 1,000-footer, you know. You go from working on them little ones that were, I think, the Denton, actually. I don't even know if she made 600 feet, but 611 seems to ring a bell. And I think she was built in 1916. And then this big footer comes around the corner. Well, she's 100 feet wide and full of ice and modern, everything's brand new. You're just going, wow, what the hell is that?
Yeah. So. Did you like the Presque Isle?
No, not really.
It must have been fairly new at the time, right? I mean, 70s.
Yeah,
I was
probably 20 when I got on her. And, yeah, I was still pretty new to the job. You know, I was still working as an OS gateman there because the deckhand went down, unloaded the boat and all that other stuff. And I didn't really mind the job, but, I mean, when you sit out there and pound ice with a sledgehammer all day long and then the old man picks it up and ices the hell out of her all over again, it just created a lot of work.
Charm goes away in a hurry, huh?
Oh, yeah.
But, no, the Presque Isle itself must have been fairly new at that time, right, as a ship?
It was. It came out in 1973, I believe, so it was only a couple of years old at that time.
And did that vessel have any kind of a reputation being a tug barge? Because it was one of the few tug barges at the time, right?
It was probably, probably the first ITF on the lakes, or ITB, integrated tug barge. And let me think, probably the second 1,000-footer on the lake, if I remember. I think the Court was the first. So
it's a smaller crew?
Yeah, it was, I can't remember. I think a 23-man crew.
Oh, so it still had a fairly large crew.
Yeah, well, you can say that, but back then that was a pretty small crew.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the other boats back in that day, they, like the old steamers, that they probably had 32 guys.
Sure.
And like ASC, when they first came out with their footers, I want to say that they had 30-some guys on them, too, because you had the electricians and everything else. So Presque Isle didn't have any of that.
So where were you living at the time then, in Two Harbors?
No, I was in Cloquet at that time.
You're still in Cloquet.
Yep.
So How long did you stay on the Presque Isle?
God, I can't remember. I was on and off of her for about 8 years.
Okay. And that's the only ship you sailed that time, or?
No, no. In between there, I did time on the Paul Tejan and the C.L. Austin and William A. McGonigal and there's several other Steinbrenner boats. You know, I bounced around quite a bit. I was working relief back then.
So you were working through the Union Hall?
Yes.
So tell me how that worked then.
You went down, you sat in the hall in Duluth. Duluth had a hall at that time. They shared it with MEBA AMO, the officers' union. So you just go down there, you sit down there, wait a job come in. If you were the next in line on the board or you were in the hall, you got the job. You know, you want this job? Yeah, I'll take that job. I don't care.
So was there a lot of competition?
Yes and no. I was only a C book back then, so if an A book walked in, you know, he automatically went right ahead of me. But there were so many jobs back then. There's so many boats. I think the Great Lakes fleet back at that time was over 300 vessels. So, you know, there's a lot more jobs available.
What's a C book?
Yeah, that's just a rating in the union.
C being?
Low seniority.
Okay.
I'm an A book now, so I'm high seniority in the union now.
So as a C rating, you could ship as a deckhand or a watchman?
Well, I could be an A book and ship as a deckhand. That's just a seniority rating for the union.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with departments or anything.
So what kind of big bucks were you making back in those days when you first started?
When I first started, I was making $5.11 an hour. Yeah, $5.11 an hour.
That's probably not too bad for the mid-70s.
No, you know, and the funny part about it was my girlfriend's father, who really disliked me at that time, more than likely because I was with his daughter.
imagine that.
That's the father's prerogative type thing with their daughters.
Sure.
But I was making more money than him, and that really did upset him.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was a mechanic at Sears at the time working on cars.
Guess he should have got another kind of career.
Yeah, really.
So when did you sort of make the transition to this on and off sailing for 7-8 years into a full-time career?
Well, let's see. I came back in 78. I worked construction for a while, and that was okay, but I wasn't really into the bridge construction type of thing. And so I went back to work once again in late season and went out there with the ice and all that. So I stayed out there till, 1986, I think I kept working out there on and off. And 86, I got married. Of course, my wife got pregnant, and I decided to stay home, and I stayed home, worked construction for 3 years, and once again, that got old as working out of town, and you're working, you know, like from here, I was driving down to Marshall, and I worked four days down to Marshall to get back. Well, now you're pouring concrete and driving piling for minimum wage.
Sure.
Well, if something happened with the house or something, I had no way to fix it. You know, I had no money in the bank, no reserves or anything, and so I just told her, you know, I'm going back. And so 1989, I went back, and I've been pretty steady ever since then.
So why did you go back to the construction in 78? You just didn't want to sail?
Yeah, just young, dumb, didn't care.
Yeah.
Offered me a job, sure, I can go swing a hammer.
Sure, plus you're not gone all the time.
Well, it didn't matter to me.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't married, I didn't have any real steady girlfriends at the time, so traveling around didn't matter to me, but I was working with my friends. All the guys I went to high school with,
sure,
were working on this bridge crew.
Okay.
So that was just another party is all it was.
Sure. Is that in Duluth area? Or?
Yeah, it was Kramer Construction there. He works off Grandview Avenue there in Duluth. So, I mean, it was a good outfit to work for. It's just like I say, when you're working that far out of town and you're paying all your expenses and stuff like that, you're doing a lot of hard work for minimum wage.
Sailing wasn't as tough a life then, maybe?
Well, you know, the life never really changed. It's, the boats are so much better now. They're modernized, the decks, you know, you're not dealing with tarps and strong backs and wedges and all that other stuff that you were on the older boats. It's a lot easier jobs.
So you went back in 89. What ship did you go on then?
Indiana Harbor, as a matter of fact.
So that was your first one. So you stayed with ASC this whole time since?
Yeah. Yep.
And was that a choice you made, or was that just because they offered you the job, or was that a union?
That was pretty much a choice I made. ASC was always probably one of the better outfits to work for, that SIU crude. So I always liked working with them. I liked the people that were there. I liked the ships. And like I say, the jobs were so much better than they were with Steinbrenner.
Was Steinbrenner a union outfit?
Oh, yeah.
He was SIU as well?
SIU, yeah. The officers were MEBA AMO at the time, and before they split up, and SIU was the crew members.
Okay. Is it still that way today with ASC?
I don't believe Kinsman Marine is around anymore.
Oh, no. I mean, with ASC, is it SIU for the crew?
Oh, or? Yeah. Yep, SIU is still a crew.
And AMO is the officers?
Yes.
Okay. So you went out as a deckhand on the Indiana Harbor?
89? No, in 89 I was a watchman by then. I went on as a watchman.
Okay. And then when did you start wheeling?
I think my first wheeling job was on the Indiana Harbor in 1990.
And who was skipper there?
H. Peter Gronwell.
Okay. He's quite a legend, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's a hell of a guy, too. I'd never say a bad thing about him. Right.
What's it like learning to wheel a ship? What are the tricks you have to learn?
I don't know. I guess mostly the biggest thing to learn is anticipation. Trying to figure out, you know, because you start them turning, they don't stop on their own. You have to anticipate when to put wheel against them, how much to use to slow them down, and how much to use to speed them up. And each boat is different. They all have their own little characteristics or their own little quirks, you know, and you really have to learn what they are if you're going to be effective at your job.
So turning the wheel actually can speed up the vessel or slow it down?
Yeah, it's not at all like driving a car.
And how much does the mate's knowledge of the job help or hinder you? So if you've got a third...
Hour then. Back when I first started, they were a big help.
Yeah?
Now, it doesn't really matter to me one way or another.
Why is that?
They tell me when they want me to start the turn. I usually make the turn and finish it up, and that I don't usually need any help with anything I do. So
because you know the job.
You know, I've just been there so long, I know the boat that well. But you know, if making docks or something like that, when the captain wants you to do something, or if he wants to go a little faster or something, well, he's going to tell you what he wants, and there's a lot of anticipation trying to figure out what he's going to want, but what he actually ends up wanting, you know, you got to know how to do that too.
Sure. So when you started sailing in the winter, how was the weather? I mean, everyone talks about the weather on the lakes, how horrible it can be, and is it really as bad, or is it overrated, so to speak?
This year was a pretty mild year as far as temperature went, and as far as the freezing spray goes. A lot of wind, you know, we ran a lot of weather courses this year. Like 1989, when I was on the harbor, there was a lot of wind, but it was cold. It was brutally cold also.
Yeah.
So any spray you did make all turned to ice. So consequently, there was a lot of sledgehammer work then too, but she has a de-icing system on her where you have them sprinklers that run down the rails and stuff, and that helps out a lot. But I was so frozen, as a matter of fact, I think... there's still some pictures of me floating around. I think Van Vlack has them, that I was so froze into my snowmobile suit that I couldn't even bend my legs enough to get over the threshold to get into the cabins. They had to pick me up and carry me in sideways and stand me up in the hallway and let me thaw out.
From hammering ice?
From being outside all day, yeah. I mean, it was just that cold, and you're out there working with water all day long.
So you were, what, just trying to chip ice off the boat, or?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You got to get the hatches clear so you can get the hatches off. You have to get the ice off the hatch crane rail so you can get the crane up and down the deck. It's just work that has to be done.
Yeah. So winter is the toughest season probably then.
Oh, yeah. But winter's the hardest time out there by far.
Is it the storms or just the ice and the cold?
Well, it's all. It's the whole thing. Yeah, it's a whole ball of wax. Plus, you know, if a lot of people don't believe in that cabin fever or light deprivation. I put a lot of faith in that. When you're living in the dark most of the time,
mm-hmm.
it tends to affect your moods.
And you're always working at night at one point or another in the winter, right?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, you look at the 4 to 8 watch, you work 4 to 8 in the morning, it's just getting light when you get off work. When you come to work in the afternoon, it's just getting dark.
Yeah, that's got to affect your psyche, I would think.
So we call it living like a mushroom or a mole.
Sure. What do you like best about the job?
I don't know anymore. I wasn't ready for that one. What do I like best about the job? I don't know. I like steering the boat. I like wheeling the boat. I like doing what I do.
Yeah.
I'm not too keen on all the security issues and all that other stuff that they got going on today, you know. But that's neither here nor there. It's something that has to be. Whether you like it or not, it's another story.
Sure.
I think a lot of it's a little overplayed, but...
Let's go back to the winter thing. Are there places on the lake that you like or just kind of dread going into in rough weather? Or, is there one lake that's better or worse than the other in rough weather? Or would you rather be like on Lake Michigan in the middle of a storm or Huron? Or does it make any difference?
Well... Lake Erie's the shallowest one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you'd probably rather be there.
Because seas don't get as high?
Right. But then, you know, a lot of people say, well, there's Lake Superior is such a big lake. You know, a lot of ways I'd rather be on Lake Superior than on Lake Michigan, because Lake Michigan, your weather's predominantly north and south, and it's a long lake, and there's nothing breaking up the sea all the way down.
So the seas get higher on Lake Michigan?
Yes and no. Like I say, it's just, if you got a north wind and a north sea and you're going down to Gary, all's fine and dandy, but what do you do when you get there? You've run out of room. Turning her on, you're going to roll the shit out of her because you got to go broadside to the sea. If you got an 18, 20-foot swell, you can't make it into the dock, so you have to turn around to anchor. Or you have to turn around to, you know, point her back into the wind. So, either way, there's just nowhere to go.
So you just try and slow it down and get there when the seas are lower,
yep.
Hopefully.
Yep.
How is boredom out there? I mean, I would think stuck in the river in the ice, you know, is it? I mean, a lot of long time where you don't have much to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, boredom's a big factor, but, you know, we got cable TV and stuff like that nowadays, you know, that helps out a lot.
Yeah.
But along with that now, you know, you used to have nightly cribbage games and you used to have poker games and all that other stuff out there to kill time, and guys socialize, you know, you go from room to room, you know, talk to different people.
Uh-huh.
Now you got satellite TV, so you just kind of go to your room and sit there. Nobody socializes anymore.
So the crews aren't as tight as they used to be?
No, you used to have permanent crews now, and then now everybody's rotating through, you know, officers as well. You You'd be working with one guy one day, and you wake up and you work with somebody else. You just never know who's coming or who's going anymore.
So you miss the old days of that camaraderie?
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about the garden. When did you start that, and how how did that come about?
Let me think.
I've never seen that on another ship before, so I'm...
Yeah. Well, we started off, we were just growing, like, a pepper plant in the pilot house, just for something to do. We planted a couple of seeds. Seeds come up, so we just kept putting them in bigger pots as they went. One day, Captain Yell and Darrell Overby were in Two Harbors, and they came out to the house, and I built my wife an above-ground garden, and which is basically, it's like the garden's on the boat, but it's about 3 feet off the ground, so all she has to do is walk up and garden.
Uh-huh.
And we just kind of looked at it. We talked about it a little bit and said, well, you know, we could probably do something like this. So we did that, and then we found out that wind was going to be a bother, so then we had to put the sides on it, and once the sides were on it, well, then the wind still got in there and twirled around, so then we started off with the tarp, and then the tomato plants all grew the tarp, so then we had to put the end caps on her, and then after that, then we ended up putting the doors on it that folded down. So that's just an evolving project.
So what does the company think of this? Do they say any comment?
No, I think everybody thinks it's pretty neat.
I thought it was pretty interesting. I hadn't seen that before. Sort of like,
I mean, I've never heard anything really negative about it.
Give me some idea of what you grow. I know you got cucumbers. And.
No, we don't grow cucumbers.
Oh, I thought you did.
No. We tried them, but they didn't grow very well. But we grow these novelty potatoes. They're all blue potatoes. They're blue outside. They're blue inside.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're very good potatoes. And then let's see, we grew carrots this year, radishes, bush beans, and let's see, then we tried some, like I say, the pepper garden didn't do any good this year. All the pepper plants ended up dying. I don't know what happened to them.
But in the past, you've grown quite a variety of peppers, right?
Yes, I've grown habaneros and Brazilian peppers and cayennes and... It's just all kinds of different things we've grown.
Is it a community thing, or is it pretty much your project?
It's a community thing. It's there for anybody that wants to do it. It usually ends up being me, the captain, and maybe a couple other guys, but anybody's welcome to join in.
And then who gets to eat all the food then? Is it just shared around the crew? Or?
Yeah, we like the potatoes and that. When we harvest them, we just clean them up, bring them down to the galley, and cooks them up.
Awesome.
Tomatoes, we had that upside down tomato garden in the pilot house this year. And when we harvested tomatoes, we bring them down to Maxine so she could put them in the salad bar. Yeah, so the crew gets to enjoy the fruits of the labor, I guess.
Yeah. What other kind of hobbies have you seen people do out there? I know I saw Dan Lynn had the wind turbine thing one time.
Yeah, he did that. They did some solar panels too. Homemade solar panels.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which really actually worked out pretty well for them.
So where would he put those? Like in the...
Yeah, they just built them to see if they'd work or not.
Yeah.
So they ran some tubing into a bucket of water and got the water so it'd circulate through there, and it heated the water up, I think, 80 degrees in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So it did work. But I don't know. I think he... I don't know what he does with them. I think they end up at home.
Yeah. Now, how many years have you been sailing? You on and off since early 70s?
73, so let's see, 73. 73, 30, 30, 30, that'd be 40. Minus 30, 37, 30, about 36 years.
Yeah. So how many more you got to go?
I'm going to say probably 6 full years, and then I'll probably see how I'm doing then. After my house is paid for, then I'm not going to be all that serious about the working anymore.
Yeah. So what's the challenge now that you're on this side of the career? Less years to go than you have when you first started, obviously. How do you keep motivated to, you know, to go back year after year? Do you like it, or is it?
I don't know. The motivation to go back is growing dim. I don't know how to really answer that question because it's a
you've been in it a long time.
It's a catch 22 question. As sure. If I answer it honestly, it could be repercussions.
Yeah, it's the charm is worn off, so to speak.
Oh yeah, the charm's worn off. You know, every 5 years now you got to renew your Siemens card. Every 5 years I got to go to Piney Point for basic safety. Every dock I go to, I got to deal with security. It's security guards, and you know, it's just overwhelming anymore. The whole life. I like what I do, but the lifestyle is just too overwhelming.
It's just too much, not enough of the work? It's too much?
Well, it's too much bullshit.
Okay.
It's just not fun anymore. You know, even though you like what you do, there's nothing that's enjoyable about it anymore. You eat, you work, you go to your room. You eat, you work, you go to your room.
As before, you used to go up the street, or...?
Well, yeah, you used to be able to go up the street, have a couple of beers. Now, if you come back and the security guard thinks you've been drinking, you're fired.
Really? Even the security guard can do that?
Oh, yeah. All they got to do is call a company.
Wow.
Or all they got to do is call a Coast Guard or call the cops or whatever. And they have done it.
So if someone's got it in for you, you got to be careful then.
Well, yep. I don't drink anymore anyway. I haven't drank in going on 18 years now, so... That part of it doesn't bother me. You know, it's just hard to explain. You have to be there to understand it. But, yeah. I mean, you go to a dock, and you got to have a Twic card to get on and off the dock.
Yeah.
And if the security guard has worked 12, like, say, Silver Bay, if you go there and the security guard's worked 12 hours, they send him home, they lock the gate and leave. And there you are.
Yeah. Yeah, or you got, like, in Two Harbors, you have to be escorted out of the freaking
exactly.
place.
And what happened to your rights?
Yeah.
What if you're a veteran? I'm a veteran. What about all the rights that you're enjoying on my back?
Yeah.
You know, nobody says anything about that. You carry around more security clearances and everything than a regular cop does, but you're still locked behind razor wire at a dock. You know, who are they protecting from who?
Yeah. There's a lot of just little freedoms in it.
I understand. Let's say I understand the security. I just think it has to be put in perspective as to what they're trying to secure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of little freedoms that have gone away now. Where.
Yeah. And we're just by virtue of who we are, we're persecuted by them.
Because you're the guy on the other side of the fence.
Exactly.
You're what they're protecting, I guess.
Well,
or something like that.
I'm not really too sure. You know, they say they're protecting the docks and the vessels from terrorists, I guess. For lack of a better word, I'll say terrorists. Right?
Yeah.
So nobody can say Midwest Energy. Now, you're pretty familiar with that dock, right?
Yes.
You come in the outer gate. You drive down to the parking place right there, right?
Yep.
You got to go through another security gate before you can actually approach the vessel, right?
Yep.
Okay. So keep that in mind and keep that picture in your head as you picture this. The vessel is moored. The river is right next to the vessel. And, yes, they do have cameras that point up and down the ship side. Do them cameras pick up everything at night? How well do you see at night? I don't think they see very well at all. And now, if you're real familiar with that area, what's directly across from the dock at Midwest Energy at the base of that bridge? The old railroad bridge over there. There's a public boat landing that's totally unrestricted for anybody to come in and out.
Oh, yeah, on that one, yeah.
Any way they want. So, well, how are they protecting that vessel from any terrorists?
Yeah, there's nobody at that boat landing.
Yeah. You could just put a black boat in at the boat landing over there, come across dressed in black, and they ain't going to see a damn thing.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, if you wanted to, you could just go around the bow of the boat and go underneath their dock and walk up on that dock and go anywhere you wanted in that facility, and there wouldn't be anybody there to stop you.
Yeah.
I mean, and okay, so that's one point of it. Let's go to Silver Bay. What's on the other side of Pellet Island?
Shoreline, marina.
An unrestricted boat land.
Yep.
Okay, yeah. What about Eloise over at B&N? What's on the other side of B&N over there? A public park adjacent to their property. So that's the point I'm trying to get across. Yeah. Is, you know, security is fine, but what are you protecting?
Yeah.
You know, you put a lot of fencing companies to work. You put a lot of security guards to work for minimum wage. Give them a lot of power. But the reality of it is, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're really not. You're restricting the easy access, and if someone really wants to get to it, they're going to anyway.
Yeah, the only people that are really being restricted are the sailors.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the biggest complaints that we have anymore.
Yeah, and your families.
Yeah.
Like, there was a guy at Burlington Northern one time told me, and this was a guy who worked for the railroad, he said, well, that fence doesn't do any good. If I wanted to blow up the ship, I'd just load a backpack full of dynamite and throw it on a conveyor belt.
Yeah, exactly.
And just let it fall into the hold of the boat and detonate it. So I don't need to go through a fence.
Yeah, they can do that all the way out in the yard out there.
Yeah, so that's what he said. He said, that fence doesn't do any good.
But, I mean, it looks good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you say, you know, everybody can understand, you know, the need for security or this or that, but, I mean, what's the reality of the whole thing?
Yeah, it's sort of a pointless. What am I missing? What haven't you told me that about your job that intrigues you? Or?
Well, like I say, I really like my job. I enjoy the people I work with. Overall, it's a great bunch of guys. It's and the job is actually a good job. It's a good paying job. But like I say, it's the politics of the job these days is kind of outweighed the what you want to call it, novelty or whatever.
Sure. Do you feel like you're part of a bigger thing, this whole Great Lakes shipping industry and the lore that goes with the ships and, you know, all the shipwrecks? And
I don't think the Great Lakes get enough recognition. You keep hearing this old adage, you know, about the Great Lakes sailor, you know, and saltwater sailors, and all the jobs are the same and this and that. And there is no comparison. And if I went to D.C., I would definitely have to learn what their job was, too. I just couldn't step into it either. So there's a lot of stuff that everybody has to learn. But there's a big difference in jobs.
You're making port a lot more in the Great Lakes, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. We're in the rivers every day, too.
So you're actually sailing more than you are deep sea.
Yeah. You know, they got... figure 2 weeks to get across the ocean, or 10 days, or whatever it takes them to get across. Once they get across or port 2-3 days while somebody else unloads the boat for them, they got a pilot that comes on and escorts them up the river for, 2-3 hours, which is fine and dandy if you want an AB up there that you can give rudder commands to for 3-4 hours, but when you're going up and down a river every day for 8-10 hours at a time, in my estimation, every time that you're given a rudder command, you're increasing your odds for a mistake. And I don't see that as being addressed. It's just that they think, well, it's the mate's job to give rudder commands. And yeah, it is. It is the mate's job to know how to get up and down the river, and I'll agree with that. But as I said before, every time you give a rudder command, you're increasing your chances for error, or somebody to put the wrong wheel on or something. It's I don't know. I don't want to go anywhere. It's not my place to say any of that. So.
Sure. Do you like wheeling in the rivers? Is that more fun? Is it? Is there a
challenge?
Oh, yeah.
That's the most important, enjoyable part of it for me because day goes by so much better.
Yeah. Is it a challenge every time you go through the river? Is it? How do you avoid being complacent about it because you've done it so many times?
Oh boy, that's a tough question. Because really, you do find yourself getting complacent. You just have to learn to focus and pay attention. It's pretty easy to get distracted. You know, you're watching sights go by, or you're watching a bird fly by, or whatever you're doing. You know, it's fairly easy to be distracted.
But. Yeah. What are your concerns about the Great Lakes? Are you concerned about the environment of it and how the industry interacts with that, or are those issues that, you know, people talk about on the ships, or is it?
Well, I don't see the impact of the ships being as great as what a lot of people would like you to believe they are. How can I say that? You take, let's take our gray water, for instance, our sanitary.
Uh-huh.
We used to take our water, and we all had our sewage facilities on the boat. You treat your water, it comes out, you know, supposedly they say you can drink it. I'm not saying anybody would. But, you know, supposedly it's supposed to be treated to the point that you can drink it when it came out of there. And it was. You know, the guys were pretty vigilant about keeping that stuff up. And you know that because they'd always complain when they had to go to the tank and fix them.
Sure.
But that being said, if... they came out with this new thing that we had to put all these new holding tanks on the boat, and all these states have these certain places where you can't pump water. And most of them, you know, it's pretty hard for us to pump any water anymore. So if our tanks get too full and we're in an area where we can't pump, now we got to pull ashore and have a shoreside facility come down and take that gray water off. What does WLLSD do with their gray water?
They dump it in the river.
They pump it right back out into Lake Superior. What does Milwaukee do with their gray water? And that sewage treatment facility in Milwaukee is right there on the lake. What do they do with their water?
They dump it out in the river again.
They pump it right back out in the lake.
Yeah.
So why, and now you're talking at a much larger scale than all the steamboats put together. So why are we being held to a different standard?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's because we're an easy target, and the shipping companies don't have the money to do it that all these bigger companies do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you got married in 86?
Yep.
And you've managed to stay married this whole time?
Yep.
That's a tough job for a sailor.
Don't ask me how or why.
And do you have kids, Bob?
Yes, I do. I have one daughter, and she's 36, and I have a son who's 26.
And does the son have any interest in sailing, or was he?
Absolutely not. He wants nothing to do with his job.
Really? So he's seen the time you're gone, and.
Yep. Yeah. It holds no interest for him.
And did you take him on the ships when he was a kid, or?
Yeah, he's been on and off the boats a few different times.
Yeah.
He's never made a trip or anything, but he's. He's been on the boat, and he's been all over them, you know, from stem to stern.
And your wife, how does she take your sailing career?
I don't know. She takes it pretty well. She doesn't like it, you know. She doesn't like that I'm gone all the time, and, you know, I really don't like that part of it anymore either, but she understands. You know, that you got to have a job and you got to have a retirement and you got to have benefits, and it's, you do what you got to do. She's pretty understanding. She's a good woman. She's been pretty good to me through the years.
Does that help having the support from family when you're gone so much?
Oh yeah.
Because you got to figure you've worked, 35 years. How many? That's probably like 15 years total time away from home, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the future of the industry is?
I don't know. That's hard to say. It all depends on what the Coast Guard's going to let them get away with. What are the manning scales going to be? That's a hard question to answer.
So you think it's more regulated by the government than it is by the shipping companies?
I don't know. That's not something for me to answer.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to trend more to the tug barge thing, which seems to have caught on lately? Or?
Well, you're going to see a lot more of that because I don't think you're going to see another era where they're going to be building new ships. I just don't see it happening. I don't see the companies with the interest to invest into themselves to build new boats.
Yet the Canadians seem to be building a lot of new ships.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Yeah, CSL is bringing 4 boats out, aren't they? They're building them overseas in China.
Yeah. Once again, they're building them overseas.
Algoma built a bunch.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to see that out of the Americans anymore. I think you'll see, as these boats age, they will probably notch them and put a tug in them. And I think that's what you're going to see out of the American.
Even the 1,000-footers?
Presque Isle gets along pretty good, huh?
Sure does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And they get away with probably a fewer crew?
Which is I don't think so.
Or that's a union.
No, that has... I don't know. It's hard to say this, but if they could operate these ships with 2 people on it, they would.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep trying to cut jobs until the people are just too overwhelmed to keep up with anything. And it's pretty close right now. I don't see where cutting any more jobs is of any benefit to anybody, but. They say financially they have to, so I can't dispute that. I don't have any part to do with that part of it. But I do know that regular routine maintenance is pretty much non-existent anymore. Maintenance is a thing of the past. When something actually breaks, then you fix it. If it's if you don't want it to break, they're not going to do anything about that.
and that's sort of the upkeep of the vessels, too. The painting on them is not what it used to be.
You look at when's the last time the hull of the harbor's been painted?
Probably a long time ago.
I don't think it's been painted in, I'm going to go on a limb and say at least 8-9 years. And the problem with that is you can't paint anywhere anymore either.
Because of the disposal of the other stuff when you blast it off, or...
Well, there's that. There's the part of the scraping, where do the chips go?
Sure.
The other part of it is what happens to the paint that goes in the water.
Yeah, so you have to be in a dry dock somewhere.
Exactly. It's not just as easy. It used to be we used to have, like on the Presque Isle, we pull into Erie, they had a regular work barge there. You put 4 or 5 guys on the barge with rollers, and you just go right down the ship side and paint. You spill paint in the water, and that was just the way it was, but now it's oil pollution.
Yeah.
So you can't do that, and so, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know as well as I do, if you look at the deck from the pilot house, it looks like a patchwork.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have the guys that can sit, that can go out there and chip and paint like you used to have.
Yeah, you don't hear the needle guns anymore.
No, there's just not enough guys to do it. Therefore, it just doesn't get done.
Do you like the older ships, like the ones that you started on, like the Denton and some of those, or do you like the newer ones?
I don't know. I can tend to like the older boats. I like the nostalgia.
Yeah?
And I never minded working hard either, so time went by a little quicker.
Okay, well, I'm about out of questions. Any other... thoughts or comments before I let you go?
No, not really. Like I say, I don't know actually how to answer any of your questions. You know, some of the things I might have said would probably get me in trouble if you sent them. But
you know, I try to keep these. You know, I hate to say it, but I try to keep them somewhat generic and without, you know, saying anything too controversial. You know, because
I love the lifestyle and stuff like that. But you know, when you start getting into the company and maintenance and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Then you might be stepping on somebody's toes, and they don't want people to know that stuff. So, and there's the security stuff also. You know, you don't want.
Oh yeah, I avoid that.
Off the Coast Guard and all that other stuff either. But
yeah,
it is a fact of the job, and you know, it's everybody recognizes the need for security. It's just a perspective as a point of the whole thing. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And who are they really persecuting?
Yeah, that's almost the whole story in itself. And
that'd be something I get into when I retire.
Well, I don't think the shipping companies would mind it so much. It's more the government people would not be
right.
Happy.
Like I say, I got to renew my Siemens card every 5 years. So.
Well, then you have to renew the TWIC card, which is the same thing. You've got the same
thing, yeah.
So you're paying twice for the same information.
I actually had a guard in Two Harbors one time. I was up there, and he told me that I could not stand inside the gate there and wait for somebody to come down. I had to go all the way back out to the alternate gate and wait for Eloise out there. And I says, well, wait. I says, I got a TWIC card here. Isn't that supposed to give me unrestricted access after you've established my identity? And he goes, well, your TWIC card's no good on this dock.
Well, that's bullshit.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show you what the security guards think of the ruling. Here you got a guy that's making minimum wage, has no idea what security really is. All he is a paid escort on and off the dock, and he's telling me what my documents are good and not good for.
Wow. Well, I got yelled at in Two Harbors last time when we were up there last week because we're standing, Sam and I left the boat. We're standing there at that stupid gate inside of the shack, you know, waiting for him to open it. He never did. So I just kind of pulled it a little and stepped between it and walked over to the shack and asked if we could, you know, get the car to escort us out. How'd you get here? And so I just walked through your gate. Well, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
I said, well, I've been standing there for 5 minutes. You didn't see me. I'm waving my arms. You're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Well, the boat was supposed to call when someone come off.
Well, once again, you got rotary crews on there. A lot of people don't know this. Don't know all the new security rules. You know, they don't know what they're following or what they're not. All boats have different ways, and all docks have different ways. So that's all part of, you know, if you have a normal crew, everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah, but I had one guy thought my discman was a detonator at Burlington Northern. He thought I was going to blow up the ship. I said, no, it plays my Neil Young CD, and I told him he could listen to it if he'd like. I had to open it up and show him a compact disc inside of it.
Yeah, you gotta love it, man.
Yeah, it's like, and then another guy said, well, I suppose you can take pictures here. You don't have a turban on your head. I thought, whoa.
Yeah, you really want to get into that conversation?
Just give me the name of your supervisor because that's really.
Yeah, that's a little racist there.
Yeah, that's really pushing it. So, well, anyway, I appreciate your time and I hope you're feeling better.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I'm off for the winter anyway.
It sounds like everyone's laying up now, huh?
Yeah, I guess the harbor went in here the other day. They're supposed to be getting off tomorrow morning.
Into Milwaukee?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right, well, you take it easy, Bob.
All right, you too, Pat.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this Inland Mariners audio interview. Thank you for listening. This audio program has been presented by the Inland Mariners Cypress Pictures, LLC, and Patrick Lipinski. To hear more, go to inlandmariners.com.